Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show, coming to you at 8 p.m. every single Monday. Sorry, folks. Not every single Monday, but on a Tuesday, obviously this week, because unfortunately, due to the storms and PowerCo not being able to build a decent infrastructure, I've not had power for the last 24 hours. So sorry, we're coming to you 24 hours late, but normally we are with you live on Mondays at 8 p.m. But obviously tonight it's a Tuesday, but here still to talk to you about all of the rugby that's happening at the weekend. We'll talk about the Super Rugby semi-finals. There's also the Pacific Four series and the various Wallabies and All Blacks team announcements as well to talk about. And we, I say we, because I am being joined, well, actually I'll leave him until second because he's still fiddling around with his camera. Eamon, how are you doing, sir?
G'day, Paul, and thank you for inviting me on your show. It's been a hell of a weekend of rugby, hell of a weekend of weather, and of course I'm looking forward to having a chat to you about what's happened over the weekend and to your followers here.
That's good, and it's nice to have a professional actually logs on in time and has everything set up, unlike a certain Mr. Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm having a shocker here this evening. I do apologise, everybody. But
I think he'll get there at some stage, Paul.
Yeah. As always, it's a privilege and a pleasure to be on your award-winning show, Paul.
Award-winning show. Oh, wow, thank you. I'm not sure what awards we've got, but there we go. Dearie me. So, at the weekend, Stephen, so what rugby did you get up to out and about around the grounds to this weekend?
Well, as you know, I've been following the Goodyear Tires Auckland Premier Men's Club Comp, and this weekend I got out to Orake Domain and caught up with the two top sides, University and Grammar Tech, and, of course, it was the visitors' University who got the win, and they remain the only unbeaten side in the competition. It was a really, really good game, and it was billed as a top of the table clash, and they played like two teams that are travelling very well at this stage of the competition. Of course, we're halfway through now, so for a lot of the teams that are sitting around outside the top four at this stage, there's plenty to play for.
And folks, you head over to the New Zealand Sport Radio Facebook page and you can catch some of Stephen's post-match interviews with people like ex-Auckland John O'Hickey and other people from that game as well. So great to see Stephen doing his good work, shining the light on club rugby. Eamon, we can see you've got your Eden rugby jersey on there. You're a club rugby guy as well. Were you down the game at the weekend?
Absolutely, we were at the Pride Ball, and of course, unfortunately, we went down at the weekend. But I have to say, really played by the Eden team. It's been a really tough year for us, and we're hoping for some results to go our way in suburbs of Saturday at Shadbolt Park. And anyone from Eden or suburbs that is watching this podcast, please get down there. It's going to be a fantastic game. We went down 26-20 against College Rifles. A special moment for one of our players, our captain, Jack Casey Pickering, earned his blazer for 50 games for Eden and made a really great speech. His parents were there to present him the blazer. And, you know, made a speech which really made me happy to be an Eden person, but a club rugby person, saying how proud he was to play for that club. But hopefully we are on our way. But getting back to what Steve had, the top four, I think Steve and I think the top four may be beginning to set in their ways with University, Grammar Tech, Macau, Ponsonby, and possibly Marist maybe at the door.
Yeah, but I'd have to agree with you there. Probably the one team that I think everybody's just looking over their shoulder at the minute is probably Ponsonby sitting there in third place. We know what a great year Manukau Rovers are having as well, you know. And then you're looking at Marist in fifth place, College Rifles. Oh, Marist and College Rifles on the same number of points, 9 points. And of course, Pakuranga picked up a vital win over my mob, Waitemata, the weekend. And East Tamaki still holding strong to that eighth place. So for both the two West Auckland clubs, Waitemata and Suburbs, they'll have to try and get into that winner's circle as soon as they can.
Yeah, and Stephen does do a write-up of the...
I'd have to agree with you.
Yeah, good year games as well on our Facebook page. Do check that out as well. Me, I was down at Waihi Rugby Club running the camera for our Bees this weekend. We got a good win over Cobras. Unfortunately, our A's did not have such a good away game against Wanganata. But if you're around Waihi, we've got Bees and A's back-to-back this weekend at home. So come on down to the rugby club where I'll be running the video for that team as well. So all of us out and about around the grounds and, I think all of us probably watching the games from home, I'll be honest, watched the Friday night game from home and then I watched, then I had too many beers and didn't watch the second semi-final at the club rooms, but I have caught up on highlights of that. But on Friday night, we kicked off with the Crusaders beating the Chiefs 20-7. The Crusaders continuing their tremendous run of something like 49 home finals games undefeated now. I think it is something silly like that. It's an amazing feat that they've got there. Let's be honest, the Chiefs went down there early in the season and won the game, but they've not really been in good form in the second half of the season. Something's definitely not quite clicking at the Chiefs. Whilst a lot of people have been pointing out that, look, Chiefs had 71% possession in that first half, they did. But if you do nothing with it, it's a total waste of time having the ball. The Chiefs never really worked the races this one, were they?
They had a lot of possession, Paul, but the big thing the biggest thing I've noticed about that is that at this end of the competition, the Crusaders, they're the team that always seem to come through. They have a way of disciplining themselves when they come into this. Like Chiefs had, you know, I felt the Quintipaya Sinbin probably was a bit unfortunate for the Chiefs earlier on in that game. And I would have to say that one thing about the Crusaders, what they tend to do is they play with a very, very good pattern, Paul. And what we see from them is that attacking nous from them. Like, you've got a back three of Will Jordan, Trevor Reese, whether it's George Bridge or Big Lester on the wing. They can attack any position. Or they've got a really, really... They've got a solid pack, you know. Remember, they didn't have Sam Whitelock there. Now, that any side, that's a big loss for the Raiders. They tend not to worry about it because they find someone new. And no wonder they're probably called the Machine. And I'm not saying that because I'm actually born in Christchurch. I'm saying that because of their structure. I felt some of the performances, this good performance, is probably unlucky. What's happened over the past round would be Callum Grace. I felt he had a fantastic game at number 8, and I was really impressed with Scott Barrett's leadership. And, you know, Richard Miwanga, just he proved how good he is.
No, absolutely. And the everyone was kept throwing up the stats of possession and territory online. But I was saying, look, actually, the stats you want to look at are clean breaks, because that's what mirrored the number of tries that were scored, with the four clean breaks to the Crusaders, just two to the Chiefs. And there were two tries to the Crusaders, one to the Chiefs. And that was, and yeah, it's what you were doing, what they were doing with the ball, was so much better. Stephen, any kind of general thoughts about the game before I've got a couple of talking points?
Yeah, I just thought in terms of the Chiefs' attack, I actually thought at times it was quite frantic, and I almost got the impression sometimes, especially close to the line, that they actually had the wrong ball carriers actually carrying the ball up. We all know they're better ball, Takiaho, Sawakula, and of course Finau are very, very good ball carriers. And I think you needed those guys at least in channel one, channel two, get them running at backs. But I actually thought at times that their attack close to the line was really, really narrow, and it made it quite easy for the Crusaders to defend or at least slow the ball down. They're probably also guilty too of, you know what, in a tight arm wrestle like that, sometimes you've got to take your 3 points that's on offer, and they turned down some kickable penalties. And we know that Gatland is an accurate goal kicker. So for me, you know, they had the winning of the game. But listen, if you're not going to ask too many questions, despite all those tackles the Crusaders made, I was actually quite disappointed with their attack structure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was one of the talking points, wasn't it, that we're hearing the commentators, the discipline of the Crusaders is going to be a problem. And it's like, no, they can give away as many penalties as they like. If the opposition aren't taking threes, then that discipline is not an issue at all whatsoever. Yes, they gave away a lot more penalties, but if you're not going to take three and punish those penalties, what's the point? Not a fan of some of the commentary that we had on Friday night either. And then I guess the other one was the red card for Matera for two yellows. What are your thoughts on this one, boys? Do you think it deserves a red when his first yellow was a yellow because of multiple infringements by the team? So it's more a team yellow. And then obviously the second yellow was his own personal yellow. Should we be giving a reds for two yellows if they're not personal yellows? Do we need the idea of a team yellow card and a personal yellow card to stop this kind of thing happening? Eamon, you said you might have some opinions on this one.
I would say no. Yeah, I'd say no. It's basic. You get caught infringing, you get a yellow card. You do what Montero done, you get another yellow card. That's a red card. The simple reason is that I don't believe if they're helping out his team, that's his disadvantage his team on that by doing that. Maybe saving a try, but he still disadvantages his team. I personally feel that the first yellow card, yeah, it was a professional foul. He was infringing all the second one. It had to come and very, very likely. Like, we haven't heard what's happened from the judiciary at this stage, but I think it's very likely that we probably will not see Montero in the final this Saturday. So to me, I don't believe in the team yellow card. It is a team game, but an individual makes that mistake and punches.
Okay, well, actually, from what I've read, Matera's got off, so he isn't banned for this weekend. From what I think I've seen, I need to go and I'll quickly Google to make sure I'm not misremembering something there. In that one, because he was up to the judiciary for two reasons. One, obviously, because the automatic red card. He was also up to the judiciary because he'd had four yellow cards this season. And after three yellow cards, you have to go up to the judiciary. Now, two of his four yellow cards have been for repeat infringements by the team. So they've actually been two of his yellow cards being team yellow cards rather than personal ones. So hence on that kind of, yes, it was a yellow card, don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing whether it was yellow or not. It's about the, I guess, the secondary punishment that goes on top of that that I'm a bit concerned about, because basketball does have the idea of team fouls and solo fouls. So it doesn't surprise me that Matera got off. Stephen, your thoughts on this concept?
Yeah, I actually suspect that's why he's actually got off getting any sort of sanction or suspension, because they've probably looked at it and viewed it as, at, even though he's had four cards, a couple of those cards have been team cards. I think if it had been, say, for example, two high contacts, I don't think he'd be playing this weekend, as simple as that. You know, after initially I thought, oh, gee whiz, he might have dodged a bullet. But you know what? I think it's quite exciting that he is going to be lining up in the final on Saturday.
In fairness to him, he's actually been fantastic for the Crusaders this season.
From what I'm seeing on Twitter, he is available this weekend for that one. I think the cards were both correct. It's just the additional punishment I'm starting to think. It's something I came up with on Sunday, because I was sat next to a person who does actually defend players at these judiciary hearings, and he sort of talked me through some of it. So that's where I came up with the idea of perhaps having a team card. But we'll see. We'll see if that goes any further. No one else has mentioned it, so it's definitely not in the public conscious idea. But just something that I thought about for this one. So the Crusaders roll on and into that the game up against the Blues. On the Blues one, as I say, I didn't actually watch the whole game. I've just watched the highlights, but pretty much a game of two halves, really, with the Blues scoring all their points in the first half. And yeah, little trivia for you folks: all the points scored by New Zealand teams this weekend were all scored in the first half for the Chiefs, Crusaders and the Blues. None of them scored in the second half. Basically, get along to Eden Park this weekend for the first half and leave at half time, because the second half's going to be boring. Is my pro tip there. Look, they got ahead and then allowed the Brumbies to come back in that second half. Stephen, did the Blues get a bit complacent and perhaps switch off a bit?
Well, to be brutally honest, I'd hardly settle into my seat with my hot Milo on a Saturday night, and Simone pretty much made a break, and it was really just a straight missed tackle at the end of the day. He pretty much went through Stephen Perifetta, and Adrian Choate obviously thought that Perifetta was going to make the tackle, and before you knew it, he was gone, and it was the best possible start for the Brumbies, and I just thought, watching from home, I thought, gee, here we go, we've got a game on our hands. But it didn't take the Blues long to get their game rolling, and once they started rolling, you just thought it was a matter of time before they, you know, might pile it on. Didn't turn out that way.
And then your thoughts on the game? Did the Blues, did the Blues not serve? Why did the Blues manage to get that roll on?
Yeah, I just think they just, I believe that they got into that lead, and it's just that intensity at the end where they just lack that urgency, you know, basically close out a game. And unfortunately, that's been the issue with the Blues in the past, where they've had that issue of not closing down a game. Like, if they came very close for their whole season to end, I have to say, looking at it, they started off really well, and I was obviously Bowden Barrett was just fantastic at first 5-8. But yeah, they were very, very lucky, and I believe there'll be a lot of work done this week at training. I believe Leon McDonough will be emphasising the need to make sure that to play 80 minutes.
Yeah, and absolutely. It's especially when it's only half time, and then to kind of switch off from there onwards is just not. It's not a good idea. Let's be blunt about this. From the stats point of view, you can see the possession and territory both flipped around in that second half. I'm talking about Beauden Barrett, as you say. He had a cracking game. And on the statistics side, he was the only player to run for over 100 metres, and 15 times running is nearly double anybody else in the actually apart from Tom Robinson, who did 10. He saw a lot of ball. He didn't play perhaps necessarily in a traditional 10 kind of style, but we know that's not always his style of play. But see them through there. Now, the talking point is at the end there. Does Offa Tongafasi have to move to the back row because and not be allowed to play prop anymore because he's charging down drop goals? I mean, that's Stephen, that's kind of not, I mean, that's not what props are supposed to be doing, is it?
Yeah, but Paul, I was going to say, even before we got there, I think the Brumbies, to give them credit, at the start of that second half, just when it looked like the Blues were going to take control of that, there was a really great try-saving tackle on Beauden Barrett, which for all money looked like he was going to score. And I think it might have been Tom Wright that held him up. Might have been either Wright or Banks. And I think that just breathed a little bit of life into the Brumbies, you know, thinking, you know what, guys, we're actually only 27 down. We're actually only two converted tries back in this game. And I think what actually changed that second half was when Kurt Eklund was sent to the bin, because all of a sudden the Brumbies started getting their game going. And I think more than anything else, they were actually winning the aerial battle in the second half. And whilst Beauden did some really, really good things, I actually thought he should have kicked actually long as opposed to high, because both Muirhead, Wright and Banks are really good under the high ball. And they were basically nailing everything that was going high, which was giving the Brumbies the opportunity to basically pull a penalty and play the game down in the Blues half. And I just think when Eklund got sent to the bin, I actually think a little bit of panic set him.
Yeah, two yellow cards not helping. Eamon, your thoughts on the Offa being allowed to continue on the front row?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that point. I just felt going back to what Stephen's just said, there was a bit of panic set, Turner, and it was it just seemed that there wasn't somebody who was actually saying trying to keep it calm. Stephen, I don't know how you felt. You guys looked at that.
I agree with you. Just watching it live, I actually thought they should have been playing the corners, forcing the Brumbies to actually kick out. But the fact that they were playing a lot of the game in between the two 10-meter marks, and if you've got a back three that handles the high ball quite well, they'll run it back at you with interest. And if they can hold on, the Brumbies do one thing really well. They can hold on to the ball for long periods. They will pull penalties.
But I guess if that's a problem we've seen from a number of the sides in New Zealand this year. Right? In the fact that you think about the Blues, you say Blues here, panics about a bit there. We've got the Chiefs, who when we took out Retallick, Sam Kane, Brad Weber through injuries, we saw how young that side was and how it lacked the experience to deal with those sort of situations. Perhaps we've seen some similar things down in with the Hurricanes. Ainsley Bay is not there leading that team. They kind of lack a little leadership. Maybe that's a problem we have across quite a few of the Super Rugby teams, is that lack of experience, because a lot of the medium-age guys, as it were, he says, as an old head overseas, or people players heading overseas earlier, you don't have that depth of experience. You don't have those leaders there when things aren't quite going your way to drag the team around you. And I think that's, perhaps a problem across a number of Super Rugby sides here in New Zealand at the moment because of the age of the teams. Penalty then. Australia doing the head in, saying that O'Keefe bottled the game.
Experienced side. Out of it.
Yes, sorry, Eamon, your connection is a bit patchy, unfortunately. Okay, so I'll go with Stephen. I'll go with you. What's your thoughts on O'Keefe and whether he bottled it at the end there or not?
I know people, Paul. You know, you could pick out any incident in a game where a team was unlucky, but my philosophy is, if a forward's pass been missed or if a penalty could have gone your way during the 75th minute of the game or the 76th minute, you've still got at least a couple of minutes to rectify or turn it around. But that last decision when Romano was taken down in the tackle, there were two Brumbies players immediately over the ball. For me, I think O'Keefe bottled it. It should have been a penalty.
Eamon, your thoughts on O'Keefe? Hopefully you're back.
Yep, okay. Hopefully you can hear me a bit better now. I'd have to agree with Stephen. That was a penalty. It was a penalty. It should have been given to the Brumbies, and they can probably feel a bit aggrieved. But yeah. But it's like in any situation, in a pressure shield, not only do the players sometimes make their mistakes, the officials make the mistakes. It happens in any game of rugby. But yeah, probably bottled it, but we've got to put it into prospectus. You know, let's have a look at it. How many mistakes, how many decisions bad decisions have been made in Super Rugby? Quite a bit. How many decisions have gone stairs? I believe that, you know, we have to move on. I believe that Ben O'Keefe looked at it, like any other referee will look at it and go, yeah, I probably should have called that.
Yeah, I've overheard some very experienced people talking about that game. So it's off the records, and sorry, I can't give you names, but they said, yeah, that they thought he bottled it as well. I guess my response, a bit like yours there, is look, if you're leaving the game down to a referee's decision towards the end of the game, you've left it too late. And I don't think either the Blues or the Brumbies can have any complaints as to which way those calls go. If you haven't nailed the game yourself, then you've just got to live with what, as you say, live with the result there. Yes, referees make mistakes as well. Generally, less mistakes than the players do. Were the Brumbies unlucky in that one? Yes, they were. They'll get lucky on other days. It's just unfortunate that was one of the big showpieces. What does surprise me, though, is I think O'Keefe's been given the whistle for the final, which I thought after that performance was a bit of a surprise, really, on that one. But there you go.
And Paul, I was about to say... Quite interesting. You could also basically look at when the Brumbies, I think when Lonergan scored his try in the 59th minute, Lolliseum misses a conversion. So how crucial was that as well? So yeah, you're probably right. They probably left points on the table on the field. Beg your pardon.
Yep. And also leaving points. Yeah. So, yeah, the Blues 100% kick success.
Yeah.
Success with Perry Pepper. And Lolliseum are missing a couple. Eamon, do you think O'Keefe should get the whistle this weekend?
To me, I wouldn't give it to him. I'd probably look to give it to maybe someone that, like Gardner from Australia, bring an independent in.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Eamon. The only other referee.
I hope you guys are hearing me because.
Yeah, little bit in it, Eamon, but I actually agree with you with regards to Angus Gardner. The other person I would have looked at locally, and I think he's been very good, is actually Mike Fraser.
So, yeah, I think Angus Gardner, remember, there was a big survey of all the New Zealand Super Rugby players, and they came back as he was their best referee a couple of years ago. So, I think that'd be a good call. Look, I don't think... I think the local referee, the New Zealand referees, would still be impartial from that point of view. So I'm not worried about impartiality with O'Keefe or any of the other players. But are there any other referees? But I do think that would have been a better call. The other games at the weekend then was the Pacific Four series that I got to another wet day, and boy, I do feel sorry for the Canadians, Americans, and the Wallaroos coming over here and having to play, and also the Black Ferns, having to play in some atrocious weather both last weekend and this weekend. Sorry, but just Nocturnal Rights in the live chat goes, maybe Justin Marshall to ref. No. But we had two games at the weekend, both the USA and Australia coming off the back of losses. In their round one games, played the first game. The USA against Australia, interesting to see a number of the USA players take a knee during the national anthem there. I guess it's something that we haven't kind of experienced over in this part of the world, but obviously it's been a big issue over in the USA over the last few years. But so interesting to see that... seeing that happen there, the handling in the game was a problem. But so look, it's been raining; it was wet ground. It was also very windy as well. What I found interesting was how some of these teams are using this differently. The USA made 11 changes coming into this game. Now, a number of those were coming from the because they've not been available in the first game due to the Premier 15's final in England. Unfortunately, both the USA and Canada did not make themselves available for post-match interviews after this game, so I couldn't ask about the issue of club versus country. And I will follow up and try and get interviews with Canada and USA to talk about that. On that one, Australia took a very different approach with only three changes in their squad for this one. And I'm just going to play a quick bit of the interview I did with the Australian head coach and captain about that.
And coach, just three changes from last week. Some of the other teams have changed their teams a bit more up. How are you using these games? Are you trying to do combinations? Are you looking at having a steady team selection throughout the series?
Yeah, well, my focus is on rewarding our best team at the moment and what we feel is our best team. The girls hadn't played a test match for 3 years, and every test match is important. And we want to obviously try to develop the combos where we can and keep that bit of stability in that there too. But again, the main focus is obviously rewarding our best 23 each week.
Last one from me then. World Cup.
Okay, folks, sorry, my computer just decided to freeze at this point, which is not good. Technical issues, not bollocks.
Well, looks like we might have lost Paul there, Amon.
Looks like we have, actually. Hopefully everyone's hearing me a bit more clearer now. I know that I've been having some real issues in the last hour, so that's why I've taken off the headset, so that people can actually listen to me. So, yeah.
No, definitely coming through.
Here comes Paul back on.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, folks. We're not going to clearly putting the video up seemed to kill my feed. So sorry, folks. I'm not going to include other videos I took from the weekend. If you head over to patreon.com/NZSupportRadio, I will put up the post-match interviews I had with the Wallaroos, the post-match interviews we did with the Black Ferns, and then also the post-match with Wayne Smith and the captain. I've gone blank as to her name, Demant. Also, I had a chat with separate chat with Tui, and Ruben Tui, that is, and Letty Lange, the other winger, who is a key player of that. So all those interviews will get put up on the Patreon, patreon.com/NZSupportRadio, folks. So you can join for $1 a month. But sorry, obviously, it's causing technical issues bringing those up here on this one. But my point was there that the Wallaroos are playing their best team for every single one of these games. If you talk to Wayne Smith, he's basically still learning his squad and saying he's going to give everybody a chance. There's a real problem here, isn't there, that the Black Ferns are basically leaving this all a bit late when it comes to the Rugby World Cup. I mean, they are beating the Wallaroos, so they've got a better team, but not even knowing or giving everyone a chance still. Stephen, that's got to be a bit of a worry for the Black Ferns.
Yeah, it's probably a case of he's really got no choice.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He's been given the deck of cards that he's been handed out, and he's basically got to work with it. So he needs to have a look at a lot of these girls, see what he's got in his squad. You can see a couple of girls that are standing up big time. Olsen Baker at number 8 is really, really impressing me. I've watched some of the highlights of the game, Paul. What I am seeing, a couple of things that they're going to come under a lot of pressure when they come up against the bigger teams like England and France, is defending that driving maul. That's going to be a tough one. They gave a lot of penalties away, you know, coming in from the side, because they're probably not at, if you think of the FPC, the Farrah Palmer Cup, we don't often see that style of play, Paul. So when you've actually got to defend it, I'm not too sure if ladies really know what to do. The other thing is just in and around their micro skills, Paul. And what I'm talking about is the simple, you know, things like draw and pass, accuracy in the pass, hitting the chest, you know, just really the basics of that. You know, a classic example there where there was a really good set piece move that set Letiaga down on the wing, and she had three people inside of her, and it was actually just a straight left hand pass and shift, and they would have scored under the post. Now, really good teams are not going to be as forgiving. I know it's a little bit harsh, and he's trying those combinations, but I think those are the micro skills, if you're actually wearing a black jersey, that you just naturally expect, guys.
And look, I mean, having been at one of so Wayne Smith came and did a couple of coaching sessions with Waihi Rugby last season. So I've seen him sort of coaching players before. Now, obviously, at a totally different level to this, what much lower down. But it was interesting to hear during the press conference that he was talking about. One of the things we were looking at was basically making sure they look at the person more before they make that passing decision. You can see that, yeah, he, as you say, it is though that he is clearly concentrating on those sort of details. when I watched it, I say when I watched him train at Waihi, it was, again, even though at a much lower level, he was still looking at those small details, the small way that you can make the improvements. So clearly that is part of what they are, what he's looking at as part of his coaching for this one. It is a very young team, and he has brought in a lot of changes from this year. But as also you'll hear, if you listen to that, what the Wallaroos interview that we did, he talks there about the fact they didn't have any test matches for 3 years. COVID has caused a much bigger issue to the women's international game than it has to the men's, and it's been very disruptive, which is leading into the Rugby World Cup. The teams aren't where they want to be, I don't think. A couple of interesting things that you spot if you're at the ground. So there's a new World Rugby regulation that's come in at the beginning of June, or for any tournaments that start off at the beginning of June. You're not going to see water carriers running on the pitch as much. All the players were running to the sideline to get a drink of water after tries and things. That's what they now have to do. They're not allowed to have quite as many people running on the pitch carrying water. Thank you, Razzie, for causing that law change. And one of the other things was, it was interesting hearing the announcer. Now, one of the things about watching rugby in New Zealand is that you're used to people booing kicks and that kind of thing. But the announcer was telling the fans to cheer positively for both sides, which I found an interesting way. I'm not sure that that's... I don't know if they're trying to drive a different culture in women's sports or women's rugby, but that's really, I don't know any sport in the world where you get the fans cheering positively for both teams on there. So I think they're perhaps fighting a losing battle with that one. New Zealand will be happy that they nilled Canada, so they'll be happy with their defence. But as you say, perhaps some of their they really piled the points on that last 20 minutes, which is where Canada got tired, and the Black Ferns are not going to get their opportunity to do that against teams like England and France, because they will not tire in the same way, and unfortunately at the moment we are comparing everybody to England and France, because those are the top two teams who I think we're expecting to meet or in the final, or if they don't, effectively their semi-final will be the final. Were you about to say something there, Stephen, or were you?
Yeah, I was. I was just going to get Amon's thoughts on something. It's interesting to me that Wayne Smith is actually working with these girls with their micro skills, their simple draw and pass. I just wonder, given rugby union, should get Wayne Smith involved and to basically run seminars with all the FPC coaches, because having been at a lot of the FPC games, I can see sometimes the micro skills are not where they should be. That the accuracy of the pass, some of the play in and around set pieces is probably not where it really should be, because I think if you need to advance the game in this country, those skills have got to be way better. Do you agree, Amon?
Absolutely, Stephen. You know, you have a look at it, like the skill set which we used to see, let's say 25 years ago, where you had a simple game, isn't actually there anymore. And we have these great new ideas and these visionary coaches, but we need to get back to basics, not only in women's rugby and NPC rugby. It needs to be coming into secondary school rugby. You know, I could go and watch a game and some of the school level's fantastic, but some of the basics is absolutely shot. You know, drop balls, simple stuff, I believe has been these coaches that are coaching.
I think we're probably seeing that, I'd say, more on the men's side, on the women's side. The actually amongst the sevens, we've seen the skill level go up. And perhaps we need to see the same thing happen on the 15s side of things. Something that I heard off camera, so I'm not sure how kind of official this is, but the women's sevens team will be in a couple of, or the world players will be available for a couple of counts of the 15s, but I think they only join the 15 squad a couple of weeks before the Rugby World Cup happens itself. And that's going to make it very, very hard for them to be selected for the Black Ferns Rugby World Cup team, because at the moment there's a lot of work going on around culture, around the family nature of this team, which we'll see, again, you'll hear if you go into those interviews. So players like Kelly Brazier, Portia Woodman, coming into this setup late, it's going to be very difficult to see. We'll see how many of them actually do get selected, and how many of them and if they even get available as sort of starters or not on that one.
Getting back to what you were saying, it really makes you wonder, like, in a whip year, what is your commitment to 15s or is it to 7s? It really should be towards the 15s game, especially when the tournament's here. You know, I can understand an Olympic year where they, and in Commonwealth Games, obviously we've got the Commonwealth Games, but in a World Cup year, this becomes so vital that we have to have the best players available, whether they're playing 7s or 15s.
And I guess part of the problem here is going to be contracting, the fact that the girls earn their money as sevens players. They still don't earn their money as 15s players. So if New Zealand Rugby wants all their best players to be available for the Rugby World Cup, they need to pay them to be available, not try and pay them to do something else. One of the interviews I'm trying to get at the moment is with the new head of women's rugby at New Zealand Rugby, to ask her what is the New Zealand Rugby's long-term plan. Is the pinnacle of the game 15s, or is the pinnacle of the game 7s? Because historically it's been 7s, and 15s is a lower thing, whereas in the men's game, the pinnacle is 15s, and the 7s is more of a feeder. It's been the other way around in women's. What is the long-term view? Which one is the important one? Because as you say, you can't have them both being, you can't concentrate on both. It doesn't work. So hopefully, touch wood, I'll get that interview at some point. On to the international squads there. Now, first up, the Wallabies should not be announcing their squad an hour before the Wallaroos kick off a rugby game. It's a farce. If you're trying to grow a women's game, you can't do that. Jamie Wall has written an article in on rnz.com. or .co.nz, where it is, saying that, look, this week should be concentrating on the Super Rugby final. Why are we announcing the All Blacks squad this week and detracting media attention away from Super Rugby? Why not wait till next week to announce it? Sure, the players can go into camp, but let them go into camp, do their camp thing that aren't obviously in the final, but don't do announcements this week, do it next week. And I must say, look, I don't agree with everything Jamie says, but on that one, I totally do. I think New Zealand Rugby Australia and New Zealand Rugby have both made mistakes in their media management this week. Boys, do you agree with that one, or do you think that naming the All Blacks this week isn't actually a distraction from Super Rugby?
I think you're right about the timing of the naming of the Wallabies, especially on the back of the Wallaroos playing. I think their timing was pretty poor. Suffice to say, looking at that Wallaby squad, it's a good squad. I've got no qualms with some of the guys that have missed the team, the likes of Isaac Rodder, Reece Hodge. Reece Hodge kind of reminds me of a player who's probably level is more Super Rugby than anything. I've seen him have opportunity. I don't know if he's got a lot of X factor. He does most things right, but the fact that they've been able to bring the likes of sort of Karevi, Koriabeti, and Quade Cooper back into the team. Well, this is another year later, and they're going to be a year better, in my opinion. One player I am really excited about that they've actually brought into the side is Suliasi Vunivalu. He's looked really impressive for the Queensland Reds coming across from the Melbourne Storm, and he looks like he's just finding his feet. And I thought one of the best stories of this Wallabies team is Caden Neville at 33 years old, making the Wallabies. A lot of people would say, gee, that's a little bit long in the tooth, but I think he's been one of these players that has always been there or thereabouts. But I think he's had a year and probably deserves it. And also, I've got to say, Jed Holloway from the Waratahs has been really, really impressive with ball, good ball playing lock as well.
Eamon, you were saying pre-show to me that you thought the Wallabies were going to be putting together a very strong team. You agree with Stephen that you're happy with this squad?
I think they've got a really, really good squad to work on. And, you know, you have a look at the average age, it's still a very, very young squad. And, you know, Dave Rennie is, you know, give someone from outside a bit of a go. I believe that the Wallabies are going to be really tough for the All Blacks this year. I'm not saying that they're going to win the Betters League Cup, but they are going to test us. And they've tested us for the last few years. And I just believe that, like, some of the names that are coming through, like Jed Holloway, that guy's had a fantastic season. You know, you've got Michael Hooper there. You've got that experience. Lachlan Lonergan, I'm a big fan of his. I've been a big fan of his since he started playing for the Brumbies a couple of years ago, and I was so impressed with him on Saturday. So, yeah, I think this Wallaby side is a damn good side, Paul.
Yep, no, I totally agree. The big thing here, obviously, is that they've got two forwards fronting up on the photo there, which is unusual. But the big question, I think, really has to come down to: are you guys a shirt out Michael Hooper kind of guy, or are you a shirt tucked in Taulalolo Tupou kind of guy? Do you believe players should tuck in, or are you a shirt out guy, Stephen?
I'm definitely a tuck-in. If you've got your shirt hanging and somebody's making a last-ditch tackle, I've seen actually guys just grab the back of the shirt and just do enough to pull a player down. So I always like my players to have their shirts tucked in, unless they're a bit big around the midriff. Well, there's not a lot you can do, really.
I'm a shirt-out Hooper kind of guy. Eamon, you're going to have to be the deciding vote here.
Absolutely, absolutely shoot out, because as I've got older, my body shape has changed, and believe me, I can no longer, because it doesn't look like, I don't look like a very handsome man, and in fact, it's quite scary to a lot of people, so definitely shoot out.
There we go. Okay, so there you go, folks. You've got the, two touch and go. So he's going to be fit enough for the suit. Not fit enough to wear the way his shirt in. Okay. We'll have to look. Tupou's a massive person, player for them. One thing I did find interesting was the breakdown of where the players are from. 15 from the Brumbies. Look, the Brumbies had a good season. I expect that. 7 from the Reds, 6 from the Waratahs, 4 from Rebels, 3 from overseas. No players from the Western Force at all, which I think is disappointing. I think we need representation from the force also to be in there. Now, I expect them to be involved in the Australia A team that are heading over to the Pacific Islands to play against Fiji, Samoa and Tonga. But still, surprised that there's nobody there from the Western Force. Probably got a bit more to say on the All Blacks squad there. Just quickly running through it for those people who are on the listening to the podcast rather than watching the video. Dane Coles, Somersoni Takilaho, and Cody Taylor are the hookers. Obviously, we'll come back to that. In the props, got Bauer, Lualala, Aiden Ross is a debutant, to Arvo, Tuonekafe and Ofa Tuongafasi. In the locks, Barrett, Lord, Ritalik, Ba'ai and Whitelock. Into the Lucy's, and you've got Kane and Papulihi, Iwani and Surveyor, and then Satutu and Soakula. Soakula in there for the first time. Into the backs, and we've got Christie, Fakatava and Smith. Fakatava there for the first time. Barrett, Mwanga and Perifeta, another debutant in Perifeta. In the centres, Goodhue, Havili, Rico Iwani, Tuivasa-Sheck and Tapia. Obviously, Tuivasa-Sheck, a debutant. Interesting that Rico is in there as a centre. And then as the back three, Barrett, Clark, Lester Fanganuku on debut, Jordan and Sevu Reese. Starting off with the forwards then, Stephen, in our live chat, you've been a bit surprised by some of the props in there. I'll be honest, I'm a bit surprised Dane Coles is in there. You mentioned an old player joining the Wallabies. Eklund's an old guy, or would he be considered too old? And say you mentioned something about some of the props you weren't happy with.
Just before I mention that, I'm going to mention something. When anybody normally asks me about an All Black squad, I always sort of look at an All Black team that that basically where the players sit in order and where I'm going with this. I had a quick look back at the 2015 All Black team that won the Rugby World Cup, and if you quickly go through that team, that whole team, especially the playing 15, every player in that side, whether it was from Ben Smith to Joe Moody, you could arguably say we're in the top four positions in the world. You go through at least four, Trio, Kieran Reid, before Kino, just alone, you know, Ritalik and Whitelock. Won't go through all of the team, but if you look back at that team, they were all simply world-class in their top three positions. If you world teams, those guys would walk in. And even on the bench, they had Bowden Barrett on the bench, Sonny Bill Williams, and Charlie Farmuina, who I actually thought was probably at the time one of the best ball-playing loosehead props in the world. Now, when I look at this current All Black team, the first thing that stands out to me in the pack, who are your world-class players? And if you're looking at the front row, the props especially, who are your world-class props that you actually have in that front row? So for me, I'm a tad disappointed. Listen, it's been well publicised, Carl, Tunukuyafi has taken up a contract in France. To be brutally honest, I would have been looking somewhere for that tight head spot. I've been really impressed with Fred Fletcher Newell from the Crusaders. You know, he's just been a rock for a young guy on that right hand side of the scrum, and it's somebody, yep, somebody you could develop. Beg your pardon, Carl's a loosehead, but Ethan de Groot, I've heard stories there could be a little bit in and around his attitude and his fitness. But you know what? This is why you bring these guys into the All Black camp. Just on the front row, Dane Coles, I actually agree with having Dane Coles, because I think against the Irish, against the Springboks, I think you're going to need hookers that are experienced and got a bit of edge. I have a funny feeling one of the reasons that the likes of Asafo Amua missed out is basically in and around his scrummaging. With regards to Kurt Eklund, well, to be honest, if you are going to go for a 30-year-old, 30-plus, I'd rather go for an experience.
Aaron, thoughts on what Stephen said?
I can't disagree. If a player's going to take over in France, he's not going to be there. Agreed. Fletcher Newell, he's a player of the future. This is the time, and I know it's with South Africa, but these guys into the squad, because they become important not only for next year, But when we focus towards 2027, we need to, we're looking at this All Black squad, to be quite honest with you. There isn't any, I suppose, real bolters. It's pretty much what we expected. But, you know, I felt Ethan's group definitely must be, would have to be aggrieved. When it comes to, I've found that, you know, we need to start finding a different third hooker. Coles, while he's been a great servant of New Zealand rugby in the last few years, at times has tended to give away silly penalties, tended to get simbined a lot. I believe that we need to actually start looking for a third hooker. Now, where that third hooker is, whether it's Samoa, I felt Kurt Eklund's had a fantastic season for the Blues. And let's have a look at the difference here. Dave Rennie can pick a 33-year-old in the Wallabies. Why can't we look to bring someone like Kurt Eklund? Because throwers, you know, we all know what front rowers are. They don't mature until their early 30s anyway.
Yeah, I'm surprised by Dane Coles, but I do understand Stephen's point that, you know, that if you're going to have the old guy, have the old experienced guy. But I'm a bit surprised Dane Coles has held his thing. Lack of rugby, I don't think, has been performing. But I think it does mean that some, and in the live chat, not so much, it's Foster and Co. doubling down. And I think they have doubled down here. That, yeah, if you were going to give Eklund a chance at the next Rugby World Cup for 2023, you get him in now. And clearly, they've said no. We're taking Coles to the Rugby World Cup, which I think is a risk from that point of view. On the, yeah, I mean Lomax is another one that's not been mentioned in those properties. I don't think Coles should be there because he's heading overseas on that one. So yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that, but they've got that wrong. Into the locks, I think it's pretty much what we would expect. Patrick Tuipulotu is not available. Came back from Japan. He has to play some Bellings NPC first, but I expect him to come back into the squad at some point, probably. But otherwise, I think, look, that's what you'd expect. Not sure there's much to say in that space, but especially if we're running over an hour. Into the loose forwards, though, and I named them as Kane Papali'i, Awani Sevea, and Satutu Soakula, because I think that's what you've got. You've got 2 7s, 2 6s, and 2 8s. In there. Nocturnal Right says they look unbalanced, but I don't think so if you do that from that point of view. Eamon, you happy with those forwards, or would you have had someone like Jacobson in there?
I felt Jacobson, possibly Callum Grace, but looking at that loose forward trio, it makes you wonder which, when we take on Ireland in the 2nd of July, he's going to go for, whether he's going to put Artie Sevea at number 8 or whether he's going to have two open side flankers running tandem, whether he's going to have Sam Kane and Dalton Papali'i instead of your traditional blind side flanker, having a left and right flanker on there. As far as Gasula, I have to say he's been the start of Super Rugby. He was knocking on that door. He offers in what the others. He's very athletic, and maybe introducing him into the series where the Irish probably won't expect him could be planned part of their master plan.
Yeah, I think it'll be Kane at 7 and Oliver at 6 with either Satutu or Soakula at 8. That's how I read it in this one, but I could be wrong. Stephen, your thoughts on the loose forwards?
So Akula is actually a really surprise to me, and it does make me wonder if the selectors are scratching their head now about Artie Sevea. They've invested him as a number 8 for the last couple of seasons, and I actually think they're actually having second thoughts is one of the reasons why they've bought Soakula. I know his form's probably commanded a place, and listen, he's huge. He'll get you over the advantage line. He'll give you go forward, but you know what? It's kind of left, for me, it's left more questions than answers.
Yeah, interesting. Nocturnal Lights thinks it's going to be Dalton at 6 and Sevilla at 8. We will see about that. I had a chat with Pritiko Sarakula after his 50 caps, available over there on patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio. Into the backs then, Christie, Fakatava and Smith. I was surprised Weber wasn't there, but and I'm a bit surprised that Christie is. But he has been the form, one of the form nines in this competition. And clearly Fakatava is your pick for the future. And I think we've got a similar sort of situation with the tens in Barrett, Mwanga and Stephen Perifetta, with Perifetta the person for the future. Eamon, thoughts on the halfbacks in there? Any issues with that?
I would say that I'd have to agree with you there. I felt it was very, very unlucky. I felt Christie's service on Saturday was quite slow, and I think Weber's just got that little bit more pace. You can see where they're going to go with that team, where they're going to start with Aaron Smith and then bring on Falatau Fakatava for that intensity. So, yeah, TJ Perenara, I think TJ would possibly admit that he wasn't playing the best rugby, and he'll probably come through the which will be named tomorrow. But, yeah, I would have gone for Brad.
Stephen, I think we all knew TJ was not going to get picked. You happy with that? With those nines and tens?
Yeah, to be honest, I've got no issues with it at the end of the day. I know Christie didn't have a great game on Saturday night, but defensively, he had a great game. There was one tackle that comes to mind. I think it might have been on Brown, the replacement flanker, which pretty much saved a certain try at the time. And he does put a lot of defensive pressure on the number eight, and I think that's one of the reasons why they actually do like him. With regards to Brad Weber, who's unlucky, not 100% sure if he's played for the Māori before, or indeed if he is Māori, and if he is, that might be his opportunity, especially with their two tests against Ireland.
On that note, I'm trying to get some. I've been told I've probably got a good chance of getting media access to the Ireland versus Māori All Blacks in Hamilton. So hopefully we'll get there. Yeah, 7 caps for Māori All Blacks for Brad Weber. So yeah, Weber and TJ, I can see both being there. Okay. The problem area, the centres, with Goodhue, Havili, Rico Iwani, Tua Vartashek and Tapia in there. On my, from my point of view, I mean, RTS should be in as a training squad person. I don't think he should be there as a full cap person. I'm surprised Havili is in there. I don't think he showed enough last year as a an international level. And I think Amanga Jensen down at the Highlanders can be very unlucky at missing out on this one. Because I think he is that kind of big guy, that battering ram that we perhaps miss in the centres at the moment. And Rico, oh, dear me, I still think he doesn't pass enough. Stephen, this is a enigma, a conundrum, a mess.
I think Paul, one of the reasons that Havili is in there is primarily because Anton Leonard-Brown isn't there. I just suspect that when Roger Tuivasa-Sheck signed to come to rugby, I think they probably thought, listen, we'll take a punt on this guy, see how he goes on in Super Rugby, and I think he probably just did enough to impress the selectors. One thing that Roger Tuivasa-Sheck does really, really well, he seems to know how to step into, or find a weak shoulder, and he's really strong post contact as well. Does really well to stay on his feet, and I think that's what they like about him. So they will work with him. Somebody like Jack Goodhue, just struggling to find his form. But like you say, that was a pretty long term injury he's come back for, and there's your answer, just there. Why Harvilli's there last year? He's experienced. With regards to Rico Iwani, for anybody who's listened to the Ian Foster podcasts. I think he's probably turned Ian Foster, but I'm a little bit like you, Paul. I'm not totally convinced.
Aaron, your thoughts on the centres, and is Thomas Manger Jensen unlucky? Okay, sorry, Eamon, but we've kind of lost you again.
And then finally, even said Roger Pardon?
Yep. Sorry, Eamon, I think we're
okay. Sorry. So just getting up. Back, saying was he probably had the insight.
Unfortunately, Eamon's connection is a bit too dodgy. Finally, then, we'll just wrap it up then. Eamon, look, the back three, I think Barrett, Clark, Fanganuku, Jordan, Rees, we're happy with that. Bridge has been dropped. Unsurprisingly, Fanganuku's come in. And with Wes Hoosen heading overseas, Talia, I don't think can force out any of these players, but maybe be a bit unlucky. To me, those five pretty much pick themselves in.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul. You know, really looking at the whole squad, probably the only real surprise I reckon was probably Gus Stoakula. We thought he started the super season well, and we kind of wondered if he'd maybe just fallen away by playing so many minutes. If you probably really look at it, at the end of the day, he's really to me the only surprise in the squad. It's pretty close to what I would have picked.
Yep. Folks, the other person that perhaps is Damon McKenzie, but he again can't be selected until he plays some Bunnings NPC, so expect to see him back potentially during the Rugby Championship. Thank you all for joining us. We've overrun. It's been a lot of rugby to talk about, and obviously Super Rugby final coming up. Should be a cracker up there at Eden Park. It's looking like a sellout. Wow, a sellout in Super Rugby. It's a fantastic thing to see, something we've not seen for a long time. I'm very happy that it is happening. So if you get a ticket, you've been lucky. If not, then obviously watching it on Sky is the second best thing. And everybody have a safe and wonderful week. I'll be back tomorrow night with the Standoff Show, talking all things NRL, as the boys they stress about Sharknado, as the Warriors were taken out by the Sharks at the weekend. And will the Warriors win another game this season? We'll have to wait and see. But it's not looking good. Catch you all next Monday, 8 p.m. for the Driving Moore Show.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.